Mason. Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Sunday recap edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. I am Justin, your Seahawks superfan. I, alongside Nick, the Chiefs superfan, will be hosting tonight. You should be hearing from superfans from every team, but maybe a substitute or two. Before we dive into it, though, let's talk about our sponsor. Big thank you to BetDSI. That's BetDSI.com. Use the promo code FANUP10 to get a free $10. They've been in business for over 20 years for all of your online betting needs. They're a top-rated business. They're safe, easy to play. They have terrific customer service. You will get a 100% bonus on your first deposit. You can wager on all sorts of things. Sports, elections, you got a favorite candidate you want to put money on, or a candidate you want to bet against, they can handle it. So use BetDSI.com, promo code FANUP10. All right, we're going to dive right into the Sunday night game. This is me and my good buddy Chicago Tom talking about the Cowboys versus the Bears. Okay, I'm here with Chicago Tom, our Chicago Bears super fan. Hey, Tom, how's it going?
I've been better.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. So, what happened here?
Well, that's a real good question. I think we saw a Bears team that's real young. They made a lot of mistakes, and generally speaking, they don't have it together. And when you put all that stuff into a primetime game and you combine it, you tend to lose, and that's what happened to them today.
Yeah, for those that didn't see, the Bears ultimately lost by a score of 31-17 to the Dallas Cowboys. So, obviously you had Brian Hoyer starting. That didn't help. What's your quick review of your backup quarterback situation?
To be perfectly honest, I don't think Brian Hoyer did too badly. He's got a real quick release, which surprised me a little bit. His accuracy was okay. He wasn't really thrown with anticipation for the most part, which disappointed me. I thought that he could have been a little bit better in that area, but all in all, I'm not really complaining. I think that really, I don't think they lost that much without Cutler in the game. You know, generally speaking, I was fairly pleased with how Hoyer did. And, you know, he kept feeding the young guys like Kevin White at the end of the game. I like the way he did that. Kevin White needs to play. And to tell you the truth, he hasn't seen many balls from Jay Cutler over the first two games. I think he's coming around. He's doing a little bit better. The route running's a little bit better. I think they probably, you know, simplified things for him. And he's not out there thinking a whole lot, and I think that's helping him as well. So I like the fact that Hoyer went to him. I like the fact that he finally found Zach Miller, a Bears tight end, who hasn't really shown much the first two games. Again, these are guys that, you know, Cutler wasn't throwing to that Hoyer identified, and I think that that's really helped in terms of spreading the ball around a little bit. So in some ways, they were better off with Hoyer than they were with Cutler. Hoyer's not as athletic, but he was okay out there. He moved around in the pocket and was elusive in his own way. So all in all, I don't think they lost anything at quarterback.
Now, Tom, are you starting a quarterback controversy in Chicago?
I think you know how I feel about Jay Cutler, so yeah, it's not a controversy in my mind.
But, yeah, your opinions there are well established. Guys, go back and listen if you want to hear more about that, especially our previews leading up to the season. So Jeremy Langford, he is no Matt Forte.
No, he's not. He was having a tough time, and I don't know if it's because the rookie Jordan Howard is that much better, or if it's just, you know, luck where they started opening holes up when he got into the game that Langford wasn't seeing. But somehow, and this happened last week as well, when Jordan Howard hits the field, things start to happen. And he looked a lot better than Langford did today. Langford dropped a pass. He can't be doing that. That's, you know, Matt Forte's specialty. So they're really missing him in the passing game, I think. Jordan Howard dropped one too. That wasn't good. You're right in that I think they miss Matt Forte, particularly going out for passes and in pass routes. And Langford has not looked good. He supposedly was learning to finish runs, and he was going to be doing a much better job this year of doing that. If he is, I'm not seeing it. And I think we may not be too far from a point, and as a matter of fact, it may have happened this game, where Jordan Howard takes that starting job, and he begins to get more carries than Langford. And again, I think that may have actually happened tonight. Jordan Howard, I think he had 9 carries, and Langford only had 3. So I think we may have seen a passing of the torch tonight.
So let's talk a little bit about the winning team, the Dallas Cowboys. What stood out to you of the Cowboys team?
Well, Ezekiel Elliott certainly did. That's not a great surprise. I was a huge fan of his in college. And the minute that the Cowboys picked him, I thought rookie of the year. Now, he hasn't had a great start to the season. I think he's been okay. Had some fumbling problems last week. We didn't see any of that this week. I thought he ran really hard and really well. I think very athletic. He can catch the ball. Liked what I saw from him. And, of course, I liked what I saw from Dak Prescott. He had a very good game. Managed the game really well. He's pretty accurate, more than I thought he was going to be. And unlike Elliott, he is a surprise to me because I watched him last year in college. And I have to tell you, I wasn't thinking, boy, there's a pro quarterback developing. So,
yeah,
he's been quite a revelation, and really liked what I saw from him. He spread the ball around a lot tonight, which I thought was really a good thing to do. They really had the Bears, they really had them stymied on offense. That offensive line really dominated the Bears' front 7. They weren't penetrating against the run. They weren't getting much of a pass rush. And I think the Dallas offense just really clicked off of that. So they executed really well. I thought they looked great. Defensively, I thought they did a good job as well, but I really think that the Bears spent the first half shooting themselves in the foot, and that has as much to do with the success that we saw as anything. And then in the second half, the Bears did better, but then, of course, with a big lead, you're kind of softening up in coverage a little bit and trying to protect it. And I think that the Cowboys did a fair bit of that, especially late. I thought it was a very impressive performance. It always is when your first punt comes with 5 minutes left in the third quarter, and that's what happened. And the Bears only had the ball for 8 minutes in the first half. I mean, you really can't ask for a whole lot better than that.
So where do the Bears go from here?
You got me, man. I mean, they've got a... I guess they just continue to develop younger players. And as a Bears fan, I think you sit and you enjoy that as much as you can. I thought most of their younger players actually had a good night. I thought they missed Eddie Goldman a lot. He's the nose tackle. He got hurt. And Will Sutton, who was his sub in there today, really got pushed around. And that and the loss of Danny Trevathan last week, really probably accounted for a lot of the success, or at least some of the success, that Dallas had running the ball up the middle. Kevin White looks like he's coming along. I think there's a lot to enjoy there if you're a Bears fan. I think Jordan Howard, like I said, he might be the starting running back now, and there's a lot to enjoy in watching him develop. Leonard Floyd was active tonight. I won't say he really had a good night. He didn't have much of an impact, but watching him develop is going to be fairly enjoyable as well. So there are things to watch if you're a Bears fan, and if you're the Bears team, you're concentrating on developing those guys. And I think that's what they're going to be doing. I think we're going to see a lot of young guys playing a lot this year. And as they try to find, answers on their roster for what's going on and build for the future.
Well, there you go. A recap from our expert Chicago Tom. All right, Tom, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.
This is Justin, the Seahawks superfan. I'm going to be talking a little bit about the Buffalo Bills versus my division rival, Arizona Cardinals. Naturally, I am thrilled with the result. The Bills absolutely stomped the Cardinals. I don't think anybody saw this coming, though. The Cardinals look like a real contender. They had a huge blowout victory last week. The Bills, meanwhile, have been floundering, plagued by injuries and bad play, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But they came out, they absolutely shut down the offense of the Arizona Cardinals. Even at the end of the game, when there were a few minutes left, the Cardinals got a bunch of possessions that all ended in an interception. Carson Palmer was an absolute disaster today. The only thing worse than his performance was probably that of the Cardinals' special teams. Just terrible coverage all around. They had a field goal snap that went high that got scooped up and taken back for touchdown. I do want to give a shout out to their kicker, though, who nailed a 60-yarder, which was really impressive. But other than that, it was just poor all around in all phases of the game. The Buffalo Bills weren't that impressive on offense, but put some points up. But it was really that defense who stepped up. It was their defensive line who were absolutely winning the day throughout. So a big victory for the Buffalo Bills. Hopefully, if you're a Bills fan, this is a turning point for them. If you are the Arizona Cardinals, that's now two losses that most people didn't think you were going to have. One blowout victory against the Tampa Bay Bucks, but for right now, they're stuck searching for more answers.
All right, and it's time to talk about the Browns' 24-30 overtime loss in Miami to the Dolphins. This was actually one of the more exciting games of the early slate. I found myself bouncing between the games of my own division rivals, and I ended up settling on this game because it was actually the most exciting game, and it was one of the ones that none of us thought was going to be close. But the Browns were able to keep this one close all the way into the fourth quarter, miss a fourth quarter field goal to bring it into overtime. And because of, to me, there were just so many interesting and weird coaching decisions towards the end of this game. I went from feeling like Hugh Jackson was obviously coach of the year just for even being competitive in this, given the injuries to the top two quarterbacks and everything else going on in Cleveland, to hating him for some of the things he was doing late in this game. So therefore, I'm going to toss it to our Browns superfan, Ben, here first to explain what happened in this game.
Oh, okay. We've kind of explained this game. I mean, it was kind of up and down for most of the Browns were winning up through the first half on kind of like cloak and daggers. Really took a while for Hugh Jackson to kind of figure out, you know, north and south and same with one quarterback was the best recipe for success. And then, you know, heading into the half, you're up, you got to feel good. And then it kind of seemed like the Dolphins started to get momentum going at this point. You know, the blowout was looking strong. So I got to give it up to Hugh Jackson and the staff for keeping these guys focused and getting some key third downs and some turnovers and getting the ball moving back into the first, to even tie it up. And just a brutal way to lose when your kicker misses three, like, field goals that are pretty much standard in the NFL. I know he had some success with the Philadelphia Eagles a couple seasons ago, but, oh, it's a terrible way to lose. And then, I mean, I don't know. There's just some other things when you're thinking about, but just kind of head scratching with Hugh Jackson with, again, he just kind of seemed to start to abandon the run game again, like heading into the fourth quarter, which I don't love. And even into the, into overtime there, I don't understand why he gets so pass happy. And then after that, to not accept the ball in the overtime, like, I mean, it ended up not biting him in the ass, but my God, like, did it set us up with awful field positioning. And then the defense just totally imploded in overtime. And then also not giving our right tackle, who is, you know, refrigerator box on skates. He's just not very good. And we have two younger, more athletic, in my opinion, better options at right tackle. And his just kind of refusal to go to the younger options or at least even get him some tight end help. I mean, Cameron Wake was just abusing him. I don't know. It was just kind of hard to watch. It's very like up and down coaching game for me, in my opinion, of like Hugh Jackson. I think this is a pretty winnable game. And I think, you know, just a couple bonehead calls, it just really sucked. It's pretty unfair because I think it's a game that we should have won. And had we, you know, not been on our third-string quarterback, who, oh my God, watching him throw the ball, he is a soft tosser. It is just like there's no zip there. It's hard to watch. It's kind of like watching Peyton Manning from last year. He might have the weakest arm in the NFL.
Well, and that's why this was just so bizarre. I mean, you had a Terrell Pryor, former quarterback turned wide receiver, who recorded, he attempted 5 passes for 35 yards. He also rushed 4 times for 21 yards and received 8 passes for 144 yards. He was literally doing everything out there. I mean, this seemed like a college team where they know they have one super athlete they were just trying to maximize.
Yeah, I mean, he's a hell of a player, and I think it really just kind of speaks to the foolishness of the Browns last season for cutting him. Just like Mike Pettine, like not being able to figure out a way to use him. You think about, he was on the Bengals before this. He was on the Raiders after quarterback, and just like, I don't understand what took the NFL so long to figure out, you know what, this guy's a playmaker, just give him the ball. Sometimes I just think NFL lacks any sort of creativity, and he's like a perfect example of that. I mean, it was obvious last year when, we have the Smurf lineup out there at wide receiver. Andrew Hawkins is our biggest guy at 5'7", and you have the 6'4", 440 guy, and you can't find a spot for him on the roster. Like, it's ridiculous.
Well, and for you, Ron, I mean, you guys revolutionized the Wildcat a few years back and had that stunner against the Patriots. In some ways, because of the weird offense that the Browns are running here, it sort of reminded me of that game. But I feel like you feel that some of the weaknesses that were exposed here run a bit deeper.
Yeah, for starters, the Dolphins' run defense is just horrible. I mean, that's just not from your eyeballs, but statistically speaking, they're the bottom run defense in the NFL right now, with Sue on the D-line and guys like Wake and Mario Williams. It was bad last year. It's just gotten much worse now. And Tannehill is just so inconsistent. And I like Tannehill, but he's so inconsistent. And I feel like on paper, this is a game we should have won. Not just based off our rosters, but based off all the injuries and issues that Cleveland was coming into town with. There's no reason this game should have been close. If you just look at the rosters that were actually on the field or the players on the field. And in typical Dolphin fashion, of course, we let a team that I felt like shouldn't stay in or be close in a game stay in. And not only did they stay in, really, the Browns should have won. I mean, they missed so many field goals, especially that last field goal with, I think, 4 seconds left. The game should have been over right there. I really thought it would be. So I guess in typical Browns fashion, they gave away a game they should have won. But the Dolphins just don't know how to just step on the throat of a team that they really should go in and beat. They seem to really struggle with that, and Tannehill remains inconsistent. I don't understand it, and there was no excuse for it in this game on that side of the ball, because they were pretty much applying very little pressure through most of the game on Tannehill. He really only has himself to blame for that. He has a nice little trio of receivers to go to in Stills, Parker, and Landry. No excuse for this performance. Glad to be 1-2 over 0-3, that's for sure. And in the end, it's just a win or a loss. But you gotta be nervous as a Dolphins fan going into 3 days from now when we're going to play Cincinnati in Cincinnati on Thursday Night Football, not feeling like we're ready for that game at all based off the performance of today.
Yeah, so, I mean, it sounds like you think, Ron, our Dolphins superfan, that you guys almost should be 0-3 at this point. And what does that mean for in terms of your outlook for the season overall?
Just 1-2 or 0-3. Just the way this game went, I am really nervous about the outlook of the season. And we're allowing almost 150 yards rushing. Almost 150 yards rushing. And one of those teams was Seattle, who... Yeah, they're a pretty good rushing team, but they've had some O-line issues, and their offense hasn't really been great most of this season. And one of those teams is Cleveland. They're just beat up all the way around with a third-string quarterback. I mean, we're not going to win football games with inconsistent quarterback play and letting the other team run the ball 150 yards a game. We're just not going to win a lot of football games that way. I mean, we're looking at 4 to 5 wins max with that recipe. That's not a recipe for success. So those two things right there have me the most concerned.
And for you, Ben, I mean, obviously there are no moral victories, but I know from your preview of this game, you were not expecting the Browns to be in this one. Are you encouraged at all by what you saw, and does that affect at all how you view the rest of the season?
You know, I was pretty proud of the team. I think it was pretty easy for the team to just kind of collapse there in the second half. And so I was really happy to see them kind of battle back. And I think our rookies are looking very strong. Actually, a couple of the guys who made some of the biggest plays were waiver wire pickups who we picked up after final roster cut in Holmes. And then there's a cornerback, Buddy Calhoun. And then Corey Lemonnier, or I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he had the strip sack, which ended the Dolphins' comeback in the fourth quarter, which allowed us to go to overtime. So I kind of like the way that we're able to find talent. Hugh seems to get guys in position to succeed. However, there's just some really boneheaded coaching calls from Hugh Jackson, which I just really don't agree with. I don't know. I'm pretty unimpressed with his offensive play calling. You know, I think it's going to be a bumpy season. I think if the Browns get 2-3 wins, I think that's probably about what you can expect. Not really sure where they're going to come. Maybe when Corey Coleman and Terrell Pryor come back. Overall, like it's just kind of disheartening because we've now had two winnable games. I think with a little better coaching staff, a little better offensive play calling, I think we could very easily be 2-1, and the season would feel a lot different.
Yeah. Well, good stuff. Thanks a lot, guys. We'll be talking soon.
All right, thanks.
Cheers. And we now go to the Detroit Lions 27-34 loss in Lambeau to the Green Bay Packers. And we are here with our Green Bay Packers superfan, Brian, to explain the game. Brian, you know, Rodgers didn't have a perfect game, but he had a good enough game. And you guys pulled this one away at home. How did it go?
It was great to see the offense looking back to normal. The protection was great today. Rodgers, you know, he didn't play a perfect game, but he played the way that I think most people have come to expect from him, which is, you know, one step below superhuman. That first half, we were lights out. I think we went into the half 31-10, and we actually gave up a kind of an explosive play there at the end to Marvin Jones, or it would have been 31-3. Offense was clicking on all cylinders in the first half. Defense looked pretty good in the first half as well, aside from the one play to Marvin Jones. And then the second half rolled around, and things sort of flipped. The Packers have usually struggled. When we get out to big leads, we have a tendency to kind of take our foot off the gas. So I wasn't necessarily surprised to see the Lions mount a comeback, although it's never very comfortable watching a 28-point lead erode into what was effectively a 7-point win. So defense has a lot of room for improvement, and we were without a lot of guys today. Clay Matthews was out, Sam Shields was out. Dayton Jones, one of our rotational pass rushers. Morgan Burnett was out. I think there was four or five guys in the defense. So the Lions put up a good fight, but over the course of the game, I think the better team won.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you say that the defense sort of opened up there. And for one, at least you guys didn't need a Hail Mary to win this one again. But I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it seems like the defense put up decent stats if you're just purely looking at defensive stats in terms of 3 sacks, 9 tackles for loss, 5 passes defensed, and 4 quarterback hits. But it seems like the Lions were able to get some big plays to bring themselves back into this one.
Yeah, it's the same story as we've seen basically under Dom Capers. We really struggle to make adjustments. That's something that he doesn't do very well. He is good at game planning ahead of the game. We usually look pretty good in the first half, like we did today. But if somebody starts getting exploited on our defense, we are very slow to react. Today you saw Marvin Jones put up a record day, and basically the game plan looked very similar to last week. Let's keep rolling Demaryius Randall out there to cover him, and he wasn't able to do that. I think I saw Marvin Jones put up over 200 yards receiving, much of that against Randall. Similar to Marvin Jones, their tight end, we've struggled to cover tight ends for quite a while now, and Eric Ebron was just kind of their burst down machine. Come third, if it was third and long, you could pretty much bank that it was going to be a play at the sticks to Eric Ebron, and in the long run we were able to kind of grind out a win here, but it was a lot closer than it needed to be, and probably a lot closer than it should have been.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the two guys I wanted to bring up. Eric Ebron, he's always been banged up. He was banged up this preseason, but he had himself a decent game. And Marvin Jones, I mean, he's looking like one of the best free agent pickups with 6 receptions for 205 yards and 2 touchdowns. I mean, if you're a Lions fan, obviously you didn't get the win. They fall to 1-2. But what did you see on their side that, is maybe encouraging or concerning?
I think you hit on it there with Marvin Jones being a great pickup. Golden Tate's an awful good player, too. We didn't see as much out of him today, and I don't think they saw much out of him last week either. But I think that tandem is going to be one that is better than expected. I think coming into the season, you're down Calvin Johnson. Those are some mighty big shoes to fill. But in some ways, their offense is probably going to flow a little bit better instead of having it to funnel everything through him to have a little bit more opportunity to spread the ball around. And, they're good route runners. And I think the big thing for Matt Stafford is just to give him open targets. He's not a guy that is super accurate. So the more open you can get, the better off that passing game is going to be. And I think both Golden Tate and Marvin Jones are really good route runners. So kind of when they come out of their breaks, you should expect to see some separation there. So, signs of light for them. The running game wasn't really a strong point for them today. But the Packers, to my surprise, has been very good at defending the run. So better days might be ahead for them in that area, but not against Green Bay.
Great. Well, again, you're once again my Super Bowl pick, so I'm hoping you guys keep this thing going just to make me look smart. So congratulations on the win, and talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Here we go. This is Seahawks Justin recapping the Denver Broncos versus the Cincinnati Bengals. This is a game I was particularly excited about. These are two very, very good AFC teams. To be honest, this went kind of how history has shown these games to go. I really want to like the Cincinnati Bengals. They've got a good defense. They're well-rounded. They've got a young quarterback who I think is frequently underrated. But, man, anytime there's any kind of big stage for them, this week going up against the defending champions, they seem to wilt. Whether it's the playoffs, primetime games, division matchups against, the Steelers. And so I was really, really disappointed. I thought they had a really good shot. Trevor Siemian, the quarterback of the Broncos, had a pretty good game, especially on the stat sheet, threw for 4 touchdowns. And some of those passes were excellent, right on the money, great timing. Some of his deeper passes, though, honestly, were not great throws. I want to give a lot of credit to Emmanuel Sanders in particular, and also Demaryius Thomas. They both had deep touchdown passes that were pretty badly underthrown that they made great adjustments to haul in. So as long as, they can sort of be the safety valve for the young quarterback, I think they could be in good shape. That Denver defense continues to be ferocious. Cincinnati is a very good offense, but they really couldn't get anything going. Then at the end, when they were trying to make their comeback, they're intercepting the ball. So a lot of credit needs to go to that unit as well. The Broncos, I'm not quite ready to say I'm fully a believer yet, but they're starting to warm me up to them. The Cincinnati Bengals, probably going to be knocking teams out left and right until we get to another primetime game or another big matchup or the playoffs, at which point, until they show me otherwise, I can't help but conclude that they're probably going to fold again.
All right, and it's time to bring us to the Oakland Raiders 17-10 road win over the Tennessee Titans. This was a close game all the way through. I actually watched a chunk of it because, given that the Chiefs were playing a later game, I decided I was going to spy a bit on my division rivals and hoping that the Raiders were going to drop this one on the road. But they were able to keep it. Although they had an uneven game by Derek Carr, they still got some good, an incredibly good game out of Michael Crabtree, who ended up going 8 receptions for 102 yards. But the big thing here was that there were a series of interesting calls towards the end of it, because, like I said, these two teams are going back and forth. Marcus Mariota had really a down game overall. He made some things happen, but he also made a fair amount of mistakes with three turnovers. But still, the Titans, they really stayed in it with their running game, with DeMarco Murray rushing for 16 carries for 114 yards and a touchdown. He was much better when he broke it outside than he went through the middle, unlike his time at Dallas. But, you know, the Titans, they were there. They had a chance to tie this game up at the very end in less than a minute. They threw a, you know, at the time, touchdown to Andre Johnson, the former great. And he was called for offensive pass interference off of what seemed like, at best, a questionable call. I mean, he put his hand on the defender. The defender fell down, but it didn't seem like he, you know, shoved the guy to the ground. Either way, the next play, Mariota throws it on fourth down to another receiver who gets basically, you know, bowled over as the ball was coming in. Also, no call, and the Raiders come away with the win. Our dearest superfan Monty, he is at a wedding today, so he can't recap this in his usual fashion. I'm sure he's very happy about it, but you know, for the Raiders, I feel like the biggest takeaway is that their defense has figured itself out. This was not a 30 plus point game. They got tight there when they needed to. And that has to be encouraging. Granted, this is against a Titans team that most people don't expect to be particularly potent on offense. From the Titans side, I mean, it's got to be, you know, not demoralizing, but it's got to be disappointing, you know, because they had a chance to beat what I think is a pretty good team in their home turf, and they have not been good at home for quite a long time, and it just slipped away. I mean, there was just too many mistakes. This is a team that has some young promise, but they're just not quite there yet. And the refs certainly did not help this one, or help them in this one.
This is Justin, the Seahawks superfan, back again, this time talking about the Minnesota Vikings versus the Carolina Panthers. This is another game where I think the result will surprise a lot of people. Now, I was calling for this one to be a closer game than people were expecting, mainly because that Vikings defense is so good, and they were really, really good today. They intercepted Cam Newton several times. It kept the running game in check. Sam Bradford, though, continued to play pretty well. They're using him as kind of that more game manager type quarterback, and I don't really mean that in a bad way. You know, they're relying on defense and special teams. They just need him to basically collect first downs, a couple chunks of yards, and not turn the ball over, and he did exactly that. Matt Asiata and Jerick McKinnon kind of split the carries. The two of them combined to a pretty decent running back day. Kyle Rudolph, the tight end, had a really nice day as well. Overall, it was just a really, really good effort on all phases for the Minnesota Vikings. If you're the Carolina Panthers, here's another situation where you're facing a team that not a lot of people think stands much of a chance, and they do a lot better than expected. In this case, the Carolina Panthers weren't able to come back and pull away at the end. The only points they scored were in the first quarter. Cam Newton didn't look good all day. I mentioned the interceptions. Couldn't get anything going on the ground. Really just kind of a poor effort in all phases, honestly. The Carolina Panthers really need to take a step back and evaluate where they are right now. I was a little worried about them after the Super Bowl loss. In my experience, the Super Bowl hangover is a real thing. And at least right now, it's starting to look like it might be affecting the Carolina Panthers.
Hey, Sam. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing okay, Neil. You must be happy.
I'm not sure if I'm happy, you know. I've been sitting for the last hour and a half. Over here, we call it squeaky bum time, where you're sitting on the edge of your seat and you can't sit still. So, no, it was a terrible, terrible night. We won. I'm happy. I'll be happy tomorrow. Right now, I'm still trying to land back down here on Earth.
Yeah, and so for those who didn't see the game, the final score is 28-27 Redskins. They kicked a field goal with under 2 minutes left and then intercepted an Eli Manning pass to ice the game. What do you think was the biggest thing for the Redskins in this game, Neil?
There were so many things going on here, Sam. When you look through the scoring of tonight's game, I was very worried in the first half because I think, well, towards the end of the first half, you guys had 21 points, three drives, three touchdowns, and we had 9 points, three drives, three field goals. And that, oh, we saw this story last week against the Cowboys. I thought we're just going to have the same thing again. I think the key things were, for Washington anyway, were certainly the 3 points that Cousins threw away at the end of the first half, which he did last year as well. And I thought, oh no, this is going to kill us. Fortunately, that wasn't the case. I think the turning point may well have been Tress Way's fake punt when he did a 31-yard pass to Quinton Dunbar. And even though we just got a field goal out of that, there was a certain momentum there. But yeah, I don't know. It could have gone either way. It was horrible. Horrible football by two very average teams, I thought.
Yeah, and honestly, I think the Redskins played a good game, but I think if the Giants just played a clean game, they win this game by two or three scores. I'm talking about unnecessary penalties, fumbles, interceptions. It was, you know, just a not clean game by the Giants, and credit to the Redskins and Kirk Cousins for taking opportunities where they were given them. You know, when you're on the road and you give all these turnovers and you win the game, there's really no questions you could have to answer. And I think the Redskins played a little better. I think DeSean Jackson, Jamison Crowder each had one big play. I think the Giants did a good job of stopping drives in the red zone, which we've seen all season, which is something good defenses do. Overall, I'm upset that they lost because this was an opportunity to really take control of the division, at least away from Washington. But in the end of the day, you're going to lose one or two of these games a season if you're not a top-tier team, which I think we knew that the Giants were in that second, third tier of teams. So we'll see what we have going forward. And what do you have looking forward to next week? What are you taking away from this game? How are you feeling? Next week you're playing the Browns. That seems like a good matchup for the Redskins to go 2-2.
Yeah, I'm feeling good we're playing the Browns because I think, seriously, I think we'll probably beat the Browns quite handily. I came out of this game tonight thinking these two teams are probably very evenly matched. I think we spoke about that in the offseason, about how it could, you know, just a few plays here and there could end up separating Washington and the Giants. And I still see us as the two best teams in this division, which I know is a bit, Washington only being 1-2, but I do think we are the two best teams. However, we are, you saw it tonight, our defense is really difficult to see anything positive coming from their defense. Okay, Cravens had a really smashing play at the end to get the interception, but you guys were going up and down the field on us. And you're right, Sam. If you guys hadn't turned the ball over three times, it could have been 14, 17, 20 points you guys would have won by, and that would not have been a poor reflection of the game. So, looking forward to Cleveland. Should get back to 2-2. What are you guys doing next week?
We got the Vikings and Packers coming up away for both, so you know I wouldn't be surprised if we come out of this 2-3. That Vikings pass rush looks for real. Then we get the Packers on a Sunday night after their bye week, so I wouldn't be surprised if we go 2-3. But you know, after that, we have a couple of easier games. If we could win one of the next two and go 3-2 into the Ravens in 3 weeks from now, I'll be happy. Things I'm looking for next week, I want to see Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie and Eli Apple both left this game and didn't return with injuries. That really hurt. Our defense was able to pick up the slack, and it was really just those two big plays. And on offense, I just want to get Odell Beckham involved earlier. You saw also what he can do once you get him involved. And even if you have to force him the ball, he just makes plays. So, I'm just looking to just get him the ball. Like, when you see other teams, they force the ball to their top receivers, and because the Giants have so many weapons, it seems like they almost forget about Odell sometimes. So I just want to see him used more often. We saw at the end of the game, he was really, really impressive.
Do we need to say anything about Norman and Beckham?
No.
He was fairly quiet in the end.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think Odell locked. I mean, I didn't think Norman locked him down. I think Odell made plays. I think it was fairly matched. I think it was a good game. Could have gone either way.
Well, Sam, there's one good thing that happened this weekend. Your Arsenal won and my Liverpool won. So on that front, we're both happy.
Yeah, Arsenal didn't lose, which is the biggest surprise of the weekend.
Arsenal were terrific.
Yeah, I mean, we have... Yeah, we are. It's just, we'll see how long it lasts.
Okay, man. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
You too. Have a good night.
And that now brings us to a game where there wasn't a whole lot of stellar QB play. A game in which this is a fairly ugly matchup, but one in which the Baltimore Ravens took it out 19-17 on the road against the Jacksonville Jaguars. I am here with Ryan, our Jaguars superfan. And Ryan, weird game. I guess not unusual to a Jaguars fan, but man, how did you guys drop this one?
Nope, not unusual. Trying to crawl out of this deep, dark hole that I'm in. So, you know, here we go. How'd they do it? Pretty much looking like the same team that they've been the last 3 years. And I hate saying that because I don't want to get on the team for saying it's the exact same team, same old Jags, because there are better players and they had expectations. But the results are just the same. And, you know, we couldn't get it done against Green Bay in week one. We didn't even show up in San Diego in week two. And now in week three, it's just another tight game where we were handed so many opportunities and we just didn't capitalize on it. It was, I think, between both teams, if I'm not mistaken, 5 turnovers or something in the fourth quarter. Once we got the field goal, we got other I forget the sequence of events, but Devin Hester, of all people, by the way, he's on the Baltimore Ravens, if anybody knows that. He fumbles the punt, so we pick it up. And there were also, I think, 2 other interceptions of Flacco. And we were in the Ravens territory and just ended up with nothing. And one sequence ended with a blocked field goal, and the Ravens picked that up. And both teams trying to give each other the game. And ultimately, now the Jags again are 0-3, and the Ravens move on to 3-0. And, you know, just another slap in the face as we head to London next week.
Yeah, and historically you're great in London. But, you know, honestly, I think I, like a lot of people, saw the Jaguars as moving in the right direction, adding a lot of talent to this team. And in the preseason, it also looked like you guys were going to have a really powerful running game, and that was just not here at all. I mean, is that a source of a lot of the problems, or is that just sort of a side problem?
No, that's a pretty good source. I mean, Bortles just hasn't looked that good, but he also hasn't had any run help. And Chris Ivory played his first game today, so, you know, he didn't really do anything. So I don't know if that's him just not being in there until now. Maybe, you know, maybe he'll look better later, but Yeldon hasn't really been the answer. That's just one of the problems. And then I definitely look at the coaching, but, you know, I know all the fire Gus stuff is probably starting already, and if they lose in London, he might actually get fired, but I don't necessarily think that'll help. And I'm not optimistic anymore about the season whatsoever, but, you know, this team's not going to go 0-16 or whatever, but it is just a different kind of crushing loss today, and I've been saying that, it seems, for like 4 or 5 years now, so that's how that goes.
Well, and from your perspective on the Ravens, you know, obviously Flacco did not have a great day. I mean, even for a guy who's known for his sort of deep passing, he didn't have many of those deep passes. And ended up a pretty sloppy game for them as well. They are 3-0, but, I mean, did they look like a contender in this game?
In this game, no, they didn't look like a contender. But, you know, the Packers traveled to Jacksonville and didn't, I mean, they played fine. The Packers look like a contender. But, you know, I'm starting to think, especially in September, the Jaguars do have a kind of home field advantage just with the temperatures and stuff. And I just, you know, probably mentally, and who's to blame them, I doubt people really get up to play the Jaguars. So, no, they didn't look that strong. But I wouldn't put this game, I don't know, I wouldn't take this away as a Ravens fan and say our season is over. But then again, what, they beat the Bills and had to come back against the Browns, so not really a good track record. In this game specifically, they don't look like a contender, but, you know, Harbaugh and Flacco have a history, unlike Gus Bradley and Blake Bortles.
Well, I do hope that your Jaguars have saved their absolute best magic for the Brits, and you guys have a better game next week.
Me too. Let's find out if I wake up at 6:30 in the morning here to watch it. I probably will for some reason, because I am a super fan.
And that's why we talk to you. Well, thanks a lot, man. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks, Dick.
And if you were looking for a game with fireworks, a shootout, just back and forth, touchdowns, each quarterback just slinging it down the field like there was nothing preventing them, just absolute Olympians making it look easy, I'm sure you were expecting that game to be the Los Angeles Rams versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. No? Really? Well, that's what happened. The Rams ended up winning this one on the road 37-32 in Tampa Bay, a game that had everything. All sorts of scoring, a rain and lightning delay late in the game. Nonetheless, the Rams finished it up with the win. Case Keenum ended up going just 190 yards, but two touchdowns and an interception. They had an interesting run game in which that Todd Gurley got the vast majority of the carries, obviously, with 27 of them. He went 85 yards with two touchdowns, but I'm not sure if Benjamin Cunningham isn't the better back. He ended up with two carries for 29 yards and definitely made the most of his touches, whereas Todd Gurley, he had a really beautiful one where he was somehow staying, he was knocked onto his hand, but just kept himself moving for another, 15 yards up to the goal line after being hit once. Todd Gurley is going to do Todd Gurley things, but for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I feel like this was a bit of a missed opportunity for them. Obviously, playing at home, Jameis Winston had three touchdowns, but also an interception. He threw for 405 yards. But their running game, Charles Sims looked good, but they kept it seemingly in the air all the time. Mike Evans had a good game. Adam Humphries showed up out of nowhere. But they just couldn't keep it, keep this game in front of them. And it largely came down to the fumbles and the various turnovers and miscues that allowed the Rams to stay ahead in this game. And with this win, the Rams have taken control of the NFC West. They are number one due to their earlier win over the Seattle Seahawks. And who would have thought? Everyone was making fun of these Rams with their shutout in the opening Monday night. Their sort of lackluster Hard Knocks, but hey, keep an eye on these Rams. They are they're doing their early season things as they are known to do. So, and for the Buccaneers, they fall to 1-2 in a division that they nonetheless, are still alive in, given the fact that that both Atlanta, Carolina, and New Orleans, none of them are totally taking this by force, as we will hear in our other games. So Buccaneers fall, Rams rise. Again, if you're looking for a game on replay and just want to see some fireworks, this is your game. All right, and I am now here with our San Francisco 49ers superfan, Charlie, to talk about his 18-37 loss in Seattle to the Seahawks. We'll be hearing from Justin here in just a bit, but Charlie, this was definitely a one-sided game from your perspective. What happened here, and I guess, what can you take away from a blowout like this?
Oh, really, it was a lot of just domination by the Seahawks. There wasn't much else to say. Going into the game, I figured the Niners would be able to hold the line of scrimmage on the defensive side to be able to dominate the Seahawks' offensive line. But really, they were ran on by Christine Michael by about 108 yards on 21 carries. I believe he got two touchdowns. And after that, once it was 14-0, I knew it was going to be trouble to score on that Seahawks defense. So the takeaway, I thought they played very well in the second half, but at that point, it was basically over. Love seeing Carlos Hyde continue to get carries and stay healthy, but really losing our starting corner on a special teams play was really tough to swallow, and it was one of those dreaded non-contact injuries. And Jimmy Ward went down, and then after that, Doug Baldwin continued his kind of streak of dominance there. So, tough game all around on the Niners side.
Well, and you mentioned that injury. I think the injury that most people are going to be talking about out of this game was the injury to Russell Wilson. I know Justin's not happy about it. What did you see in terms of how did that all happen, and What's your sort of prognosis just from the fans' point of view from the broadcast?
Well, actually, I was at the game, so being at the T-Mobile suite, which is where I work for, was kind of a bird's eye view of that injury. So Russell was going down about the Niners 30-yard line, stiff-armed Eli Harrell, the outside linebacker, and the only thing Eli had to hold on to was the back of the jersey, or otherwise Russell Wilson was going to catch the edge and go for Eli kind of held onto that back part of Russell's jersey and just kind of fell down. And unfortunately, it was right on Russell Wilson's side of his leg, twisted his knee up pretty good. And you never like seeing injuries, but, you know, given the score at the time, I was hopeful we were going to be able to come back. But later on, I believe the Seahawks were able to score on that drive and, you know, make the score even worse.
Well, a lot of people have the 49ers as being, you know, the shoe-ins for the number one overall pick already going into next year. Did they show you anything that proves that they're better than a bottom five team? Or sort of, you know, what do you think, where do you think this team is headed right now?
Well, I believe they're going to be a 7-9 football team this year. And that was about the ceiling during the pregame or the preseason prognostication podcast that we had, including the NFC West preview podcast that you can look for on the Next Fan Up preview or the podcast page. But, you know, really, they're not going to beat the teams like the Seahawks, the Cardinals. These are upper echelon. The 49ers are going to beat teams that don't have very good defense, that they're able to use their tempo and speed to tire out defenses. But really truly good defensive teams like the Seahawks and Cardinals and the Carolina Panthers, as you saw last week, are going to beat the 49ers. But teams that, you know, just like the Los Angeles Rams that just won this last weekend are going to struggle against the 49ers. But right now, the entire NFC West is looking up at the Los Angeles Rams, who are number one in the division. And the Niners shut him out 28-0. So just how crazy the NFL can be.
Yeah, that is a weird week in the NFC West for sure. Well, thanks a lot, Charlie. I appreciate you calling in.
Yep, for sure. All right, well, take care.
And we now go to the victor of the 49ers-Seahawks game. That is our own Seahawks, Justin. And so, Justin, you know, you guys dominated this game, but, you know, it may have been a Pyrrhic victory if that injury to Russell Wilson is serious. How are you feeling right now?
Obviously, that's the elephant in the room. That's kind of the big thing. So I'll just kind of get right into that. When you watch it on the field, it didn't look good. His knee got bent kind of a weird direction. He did take the next snap, run the next play. I'm willing to bet if the game was in question, he would have stayed in. But that's more... You know, he's kind of young, relatively limber, thinks he's sort of immune to long-term damage at this stage of his career. So it's concerning. So what he has now is a knee injury in addition to the ankle injury he's been nursing. Hopefully the ankle injury is mostly better now. The good news is that after week four, the Seahawks have the bye. So if he can get through next week, he's got some time to rest. I doubt he'll miss time. But just having watched the footage, you know, certainly I'm not a doctor, but it definitely looks like, I mean, he has to have done some kind of damage in there, strained something, pulled something. He'll probably take every snap in practice, play every snap in the game, but it's going to limit him. You know, it's the Russell Wilson we see next week is not going to be a healthy Russell Wilson, so it'll hold him back. But if he can get through next week, I feel pretty good about where he's at.
Well, and a guy who definitely, you know, seems to look healthy now, who isn't always, is Jimmy Graham. I mean, he had quite a game with 6 receptions for 100 yards and a touchdown. Doug Baldwin was just blowing it up for 8 receptions, 164 yards and a touchdown as well. But obviously, you know, the offensive line continues to be an issue, and the 49ers were able to get the ball moving on the ground against your defense. Are there any concerns you take away from this game, despite how lopsided it was?
Well, I mean, you know, I definitely want to make sure to heap some praise on Doug Baldwin and Jimmy Graham. Keep in mind, so Jimmy Graham had 6 receptions for 100 yards and touchdown at the half. Like, that was his first half performance. They didn't look his way. They kept him pretty clean in the second half, and then, of course, they started taking some starters out late. But Jimmy Graham was Jimmy Graham again. Like, that's huge. If he can be that guy that adds such a dynamic layer to this offense. The offensive line, they've had their best game of the year. You know, they still had issues. Ahmad Brooks in particular, who's just a great player, was able to make some plays. But they played much better. That being said, you know, if you listen to what I've been saying leading up to this game, this is exactly what I expected. I expected the Seahawks to win comfortably. I expected the offense to look really, really good. And that's not just because I'm a super fan, because I did call for them to struggle the last two games. It's because this is not a dominant defensive line, which means that this so-so offensive line can do enough, you know, can buy enough time, can open enough running lanes to for this really explosive offense to thrive. And that's exactly what happened. Some long runs by Christian Michael, some deep passes to Doug Baldwin. I'm not sure if you caught this game yet, but Doug Baldwin had this pass on the sideline. We're talking full sprint, fully laid out, arm fully extended, grabbing just the start of a pass and pulling it in. So he looks like Superman with the ball in like these three fingertips, and he reels that thing in. People need to understand, Doug Baldwin isn't a good receiver. He's a great receiver. He needs to be in that conversation amongst the very, very best wide receivers in the league. I think going back to something like week 10 of last year, he has the third most yards in all of football amongst wide receivers. That's a half season at this point. He keeps scoring touchdowns. He keeps making incredible grabs. And he gets way fewer opportunities than the other top receivers. So he does that despite that. They had a stat today that Russell Wilson has a completion percentage of something like 80 when he targets Doug Baldwin. 80! Are you kidding me? That's crazy. And this isn't an offense that's like has all these elaborate schemes designed to get a guy running free. These are often contested catches in traffic, getting hit right afterwards. He's just such a tough player, and he's such a good route runner. Like, he creates his own openings. It's amazing to watch. Christian Michael played absolutely terrific. He's really explosive. He's looking really, really good. The team still sees Thomas Rawls as the number one back. But if Christian Michael keeps doing what he's doing, he can really eat into those carries and maybe work his way up the depth chart, especially if Thomas Rawls remains hurt. So outside of the Wilson injury, not a lot of injuries to take away. I don't like that they gave up some points to San Francisco late in the game. Chris Richard, defensive coordinator, kept the starting defense in to try and keep that. So they're probably going to get reamed pretty good at the start of next week. But hopefully that keeps them hungry. I think coming through this week, they're still the number one defense in the league by pretty much all metrics, so not super worried about that either. I mean, the big thing is, can this offensive line gel before they take on another top defensive line? Football's a game of matchups. The Rams beat the Seahawks because of how they match up. The Niners crushed the Rams because of how they match up, and the Seahawks obliterated the 49ers because of how they match up. So I just need them to be ready for that sort of matchup in the future. As long as they can get through next week and get to the bye, then get all these good blockers like Jermaine Ifedi and Nick Bannett back, I think they're going to be okay.
Good stuff. Well, talk to you again soon.
Catch you later, Nick. Thanks.
Cheers. We now go to Ken, our Charger superfan, to talk about his 22-26 road loss to the Indianapolis Colts. This was a weird game that came down to a lot of turnovers and just a lot of weirdness, just, you know, straight up. Towards the end of this game. So, Ken, what actually happened here?
So, the Chargers got up pretty big. Or not, they didn't even get up. They were just kind of always ahead for the majority of the game. And I think the most crucial drive was the second to last drive they had in the fourth quarter. They had like a three and out, and they gave the ball back to Luck and the Colts. And the Colts drove down on them. They left about a minute, maybe a minute and a half on the clock for Rivers. And having an awesome quarterback like Rivers, when I see a minute and a half left and all we have to do, when we have to go down and get a touchdown, that doesn't make me scared or anything. Like, I have faith in him. However, Hunter Henry fumbled the ball, which basically ended the game, and I felt like the better team lost there. And it was honestly very depressing.
Well, you say that, but I mean, I feel like the standouts on the Colts were fairly obvious. I mean, Luck himself had sort of an up-and-down game, but they got it, you know, rolling fairly well on the ground. They had T.Y. Hilton with 8 receptions for 174 yards and a touchdown. You know, the Chargers, the dink and dunk, as you say, from Wissenhunt's offense, it was getting the ball moving, and obviously, you know, it had had a lot of effect on this early on, but I mean, are you worried about how well this team can compete this season, given all of the big offensive stars that you've lost already?
Oh, absolutely. We also lost Manti Te'o. That injury did not look good on defense. But defensively, we actually played pretty well. It's kind of funny because our secondary didn't actually play that well. But up front, while we were getting gashed in the first half, I didn't feel like they could really run the ball at will. But yeah, no, I'm to address the whether I'm concerned about this team competing this year. Yeah, man. Like, next week, if we don't perform against the Saints at home, I think Mike McCoy's job should be on the line, whether it will be or not. The general manager seems to have put together a team that has talented players, but this week-to-week inconsistency makes me pissed. Like, I'm losing faith in Mike McCoy in a hurry.
And what do you make of all the mistakes in this game? I mean, it was a weird game from that regard as well.
I mean, the mistakes in this game were crazy because it happened on all three sides, you know, the Chargers, the Colts, and the officials. Honestly, the Henry fumble on the last drive is going to haunt Charger fans for quite a while, because Henry actually had a pretty decent breakout game with Gates gone. But it's the difference between a rookie and a 14-year vet with Gates, who has probably the surest hands in all the tight ends. So it was just so disappointing.
And what did you see from the Colts? I mean, as you said, like, you feel like the Chargers were pretty much ahead for the majority of this game, but you know, they had a few standout players. What do you think of them and how this sets them up for the season?
Well, I think that one of the narratives coming into this year was that the Colts were going to have a better offensive line. I didn't think that was the case. However, Andrew Luck is pretty damn good. And T.Y. Hilton did an amazing job against what, again, I think is a pretty good secondary. You know, Flowers did go down with an injury today, but I thought the offensive playmakers on the Colts were pretty impressive. And you know what? Frank Gore's not dead yet. He might be getting there, but he looked pretty decent today.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you calling in, and hope you have something a little bit more to cheer about this next week. Although, not too much, because again, we are division rivals, and I hate you.
That's true.
All right, have a good one, man.
Yeah, peace out.
And so, if you've been listening to this podcast, you've been hearing a fair amount of smack talk between me, your Chiefs superfan, and our Jets superfan, Andrew, who is calling in to us here from the back of an Uber, wallowing in the shame of his defeat to the Chiefs, 24-3 on the road in Kansas City. Now, look, I mean, as much as I would like to gloat about how obviously, you know, the Chiefs are so much better than the Jets, it is pretty clear that it was basically the Chiefs sort of being there and capitalizing upon the Jets' miscues, because in the same way that the Chiefs had a whole bunch of turnovers in the, you know, the first half that killed them against the Texans last week, it was the exact opposite here, where Ryan Fitzpatrick threw six interceptions against this Chiefs defense, which wasn't even really putting all that much pass rush on him. We had no sacks, but Marcus Peters came away with two. We had Derek Johnson run one in for a pick six. Eric Berry got one. Daniel Sorensen, a former practice squad guy, he grabbed one. And DJ White, our sixth round pick, got one too. And so this is one where the only offensive standout for the Chiefs was pretty much Travis Kelce, who had himself a decent matchup day with six receptions for 89 yards and a touchdown. But basically, it was all about those turnovers. And so, Andrew, explain this to me. How are your Jets still a better team than mine?
Well, I mean, it's always hard to make that argument after what you just watched. And the way the Chiefs won the game was the recipe of how I thought they were going to have to be able to play. And I was just going to take advantage of Fitzpatrick's turnovers. I mean, I always compare Fitzpatrick and Alex Smith. The difference between them is that Fitzpatrick is more willing to take shots. And what happens there is that sometimes you have a game like Fitzpatrick had against Buffalo last week, which is probably the best game of his career. And then other times you have what happened today. I mean, it's pretty crazy. Like, last week, he literally was throwing the ball up to his wide receivers against some really stout corners that they have in Buffalo, and the receivers are coming down with it. And not to, like, I don't want to absolve Fitzpatrick of it, because, like, he was just chucking the balls up there. Like, it wasn't even, especially the last one. Like, I mean, the game was already out of hand at that point, but he threw it to Forte, and Forte had no idea the ball was even there. But I was watching this game, and the entire time I was saying to myself, I am not getting sucked in by this Jets team right now, because they were down 14 the whole half, and they were in the game the whole time, no matter how bad they were playing. But I was like, it's not happening. The Jets weren't just going to win this game. But the Chiefs did what they had to do. But again, like, nothing on offense really impressed me. I mean, except besides Kelce. I like the way Spencer Ware looked. I always liked the way he looked, honestly, the way he runs. But the Chiefs didn't really do anything on offense that was too spectacular. What they did do was that they took advantage of two real long-lasting Jet weaknesses on our defense, which I hope that they'd be able to cure this year. One being running wide. The Jets drafted Darren Lee this year to be able to get faster on defense. They brought in a couple of other young players in the defensive backfield, like Rontez Miles is playing more now. Just faster guys, and yet they couldn't beat the Chiefs to the sideline a lot of the time. And, of course, Travis Kelce just ripping up the Jets on these crossing rounds, especially on the touchdown where Darren Lee went out of his zone. It just comes down to Fitzpatrick. He just straight up gave the game away, and it goes back to that argument we were having in the offseason about, like, should the Jets be paying Fitzpatrick right now? And like, I don't want to misrepresent you. Tell me if I'm not saying what you were saying, but like, you were in favor of giving Fitzpatrick the money that he wanted, essentially, like a Brock Osweiler type contract, because he was a competent quarterback. He showed competency last year, and that's basically what you need in today's NFL. But the difference between Alex Smith's competency and Ryan Fitzpatrick's competency, it's very drastic. Like, Smith isn't going to kill you ever, but I also don't think he's going to lead you anywhere, while Fitzpatrick could do either. You know, so this is just one of those days where Fitzpatrick has handed you guys the game, and it's I know I'm rambling right now, but I just need to get this in there also. Last year in Week 3, the Jets lost to Philadelphia in a game where it was also clear where the Jets gave away the game, and it was more about what the Jets did than what Philadelphia did. And that's what I said, and the Eagles superfan at the time, Sitko, thought I was nuts and was calling me names. We were going on other podcasts arguing about it. How could you say that? They beat them. You got to give them credit. So I appreciate you actually watching the game and actually being able to set aside your super fandom and be able to see that, like, yeah, the Chiefs, they were good. They were fine, but, like, the Jets were definitely the bigger story today.
Well, I think it's fine to revisit, you know, that whole conversation about whether or not Fitzpatrick is worth it to this team. Because, again, we've seen the yin and the yang of Fitzpatrick over these last two games, as you mentioned, with, you know, one of his best games and obviously his worst game. But I'm just not sure that Geno Smith would have won this game either. And so, I mean, to me, that is the comparison to make. I should also say that although the score was 24-3, I just have to whinge about, like, the one most bizarre call. I mean, there was one fumble that the Jets had early in the game that I didn't think was a fumble, but it wasn't like a huge game changer because it was Bilal Powell who supposedly fumbled it, but it was third down. He was short of the marker anyway. So, and it bounced forward. So it was the difference between like 30 yards if they had punted it. But the Chiefs, on the other hand, had a long drive where Spencer Ware extended it into the pylon. The Jets defender bumped his arm a little bit, so the ball shifted a bit in his two hands as he hit the pylon. It then came loose as he was falling out of bounds, and they called that a fumble through the end zone for a touchback rather than a touchdown, rather than a fumble out of bounds. That went from being a long drive for a touchdown to being Jets ball 20-yard line.
Right. I was watching the game on mute, and like at that point, I wasn't really paying as much attention. I was looking at all the other games. And I was watching that play, and I was like, are they going to call that a fumble? Like, I wasn't even listening to the announcers, and I was like, it kind of looks like the ball was loose, you know? But, like, I don't know. I don't know if that was the right call. It's probably something that I probably would have called it that way. And it looked to me, just like an unbiased way, that the ball was coming out. But I honestly think that was the right call. And now I have someone, I'm in an Uber pool right now, and someone else is coming in, so they're going to have to listen to my rambling about this awful Jets game right now. But anything else that popped out to you, Nick?
Well, I'm interested to get your thoughts, given the way that the Patriots have gone up 3-0 so far, the Bills seem to still be alive in this thing. In terms of the AFC East race, for the Chiefs, I know that, you know, we were just hoping to be, at least I was hoping the Chiefs to get out of these first four games, 2-2. We're going on the road to the Steelers now, and so that obviously is possible. Hopefully we'll go 3-1. But for you guys, does this change anything in terms of the way that you view this early tough part of your schedule?
I mean, I've been saying since the offseason, they got to go 3-3 the first six games, and after that, they should be okay. It's going to come down to that first game against Cincinnati, where either team could have won. The Jets probably deserved to win that game. I thought they dominated that game, honestly. I mean, you could call me a homer, whatever you want to say. But they got to come out 3-3. And with the schedule coming up, next week, they're home Seattle, which is a good matchup for the Jets, especially with what happened with Russell Wilson today. But also because I don't see how Seattle's going to block that defensive line with those guys they have running on their O-line right now. And then after that, they have, I believe, Pittsburgh and then Arizona and then Baltimore. I know those are the three teams. I don't know exactly what order, but, it's going to be a problem. And they got to come out 3-3 before that Baltimore game if they want to have any shot. But one other point that I think should be made, if any team could come back from a disastrous type of showing that happened today, just like a deflating type of game, and no, that's not a Patriots joke. That's just the word that came to my mind.
Nice.
It's this veteran-laden Jets team. This is not a young team. They have a lot of veteran guys, with Brandon Marshall, Matt Forte, on the defensive side, David Harris, Revis. They've seen a lot on their career, and I don't think this game there's going to be any carryover. And if anything, I think they're going to come out pissed off as hell next week, and then they're going to lay a whooping on that Seattle O-line. But maybe that's just wishful thinking.
Great. Well, talk to you soon, and tell your Uber pool co-riders to listen to the Next Man Up podcast.
Will do, man.
All right. Cheers.
Later, brother. Bye.
And it's now time to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers loss to on the road, 3-34 to the Philadelphia Eagles. That is the Eagles 34-3 over the Steelers. Not at all how I think almost anybody saw this game going, and I am here with my elated Eagles superfan, James. And James, look, man, you guys talked a lot on the Thursday show about how good Carson Wentz has looked and how amped it is logical and rational to be at this stage about Carson Wentz. But man, this kid continues to impress. You guys just destroyed a very good team. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great, elated, overjoyed. Going into the bye week 3-0 is wonderful. Get a couple of pieces back, hopefully, in Ertz, who again didn't play today. And just total domination on both sides of the ball, offense and defense. The defensive line performed wonderful, kept pressure on Roethlisberger, kept him moving in the pockets. He never really got comfortable after taking D'Angelo Williams away, who only ended the day with 21 yards total on 8 carries. So making them one-dimensional pretty much fed into predictability. The secondary played much better this week than they did the last 2 weeks. Only one deep ball got behind them, made a great play in the end zone in the, midway through the second quarter, stopped Marcus Wheaton from coming down with a pass that could have been a touchdown. Antonio Brown did get his numbers, 12 for 140, but overall the defensive unit was spectacular. Yes, Carson Wentz chipped in with some wonderful ad-libs, particularly the play to Darren Sproles was wonderfully awesome on a third down, busted coverage, catching Shazier, the linebacker, in no man's land, whether he should stay with the back or come up to get Wentz, who was at the line of scrimmage, and 75 yards later, house call.
Exactly. I mean, and that's what was sort of interesting about this Eagles team. I mean, you had guys from both ends of the age spectrum chipping in, as you mentioned. You had, obviously, rookie Carson Wentz, and the extreme veteran Darren Sproles pitching in with a 73-yard catch and run there for the touchdown. As far as you feel, I mean, it seems like a lot of the rest of the NFC East has been beating up on each other and on other teams. You guys are sitting in a really strong position going into the bye. I think a lot of people thought that this Philadelphia team was in a rebuilding season. How has this changed how you see this year playing out for you guys?
I think we are legitimate contenders at the very least for the division title. Granted, we haven't played any division games yet, and I know the Giants have played the other two teams in a division already in both Washington, losing today, and Dallas the first week of the season. But if competing for the division should be something that we definitely is within our grasp at this 3-0 start going into the bye. Granted, yeah, like I said, we haven't played any division games yet. They will be tough because they'll have a lot of film on what we've done these first couple of weeks and how to take certain things away from Carson Wentz to mix up different looks. Strangely enough, though, there wasn't a lot of mixing up of the blitz packages from Pittsburgh that I saw today in the game. I didn't see a lot of double A gap. I didn't see any twist on the blitz. They did run a lot of stunts, TE stunts and ET stunts and a couple of double tackle twists inside, but nothing really from their linebackers coming crashing off the edges or corners from a nickel package. Everyone just pretty much dropped back in zone, and you know, they rushed four on a lot of those third and long plays, and that pretty much opened things up because there were windows back there in that zone coverage where Carson Wentz was able to complete a couple of 10 to 12-yard passes downfield to pick up a lot of those first downs.
And so for the Steelers side, I mean, look, my Chiefs are going on the road to Pittsburgh next week. How did you do this? How can my team, you know, duplicate this effort? What are their weaknesses? If you're a Steelers fan, what can you take from all of this?
If you're a Steelers fan, you've got to be able to convert on third down and get that running game going. I think that was the biggest thing from the start that crippled them throughout the rest of the game. They couldn't get D'Angelo Williams going. Yes, he had a couple of runs where he got loose for maybe 8 to 10 yards, but after a while, the score just got away from them, and it really pulled him out of the game. And they didn't really run the ball much, if at all, in the second half. After you do that, you have to protect Ben Roethlisberger. If you can keep him clean and upright in the pocket, he can make all the throws. But if he's being pushed around and the secondary is holding up the receivers, getting good coverage downfield, then he doesn't have anywhere to throw. It allows those front four or five rushers that you're sending after him to get to him, knock him around in the pocket, much like what happened with Philadelphia today. If they get back to basics, strong running game, keep Roethlisberger clean, it bodes well for them going forward and winning all their games. Defensively, they just look completely out of sorts. I don't know how they fixed that today because, like I said, they weren't blitzing like they normally do, especially from what I saw in the first two games of the season, Monday night against Washington and last week against Cincinnati. Again, there was no edge blitz. There was nothing coming up the middle. They pretty much stayed straight for a man rush today, and I don't think that's the recipe for their defense to be successful. They have to get constant pressure on the opposing team's quarterback.
All right. Well, your team is led by Andy Reid's protege. I hope that Andy Reid can have, as the teacher, as good of a game against the Steelers next week. So congratulations, and have a good one, man.
You too.
All right, that will do it. Thanks for listening to the Sunday Recap Show. Once again, this is Justin. The other host was Nick, and a big thank you to all the superfans for participating. If you guys want to talk to us, you can email us at nextfanup@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter, @nextfanup. You can also reach all of the individual Twitters for the superfans there. In addition, we want to thank our sponsor, BetDSI.com. Again, use the promo code FANUP10. Quick note, you may have heard a tiny little coughing during one of the game recaps. That's because I was recapping a game with my daughter, who is a little under the weather right now, sitting next to me. I could go back and re-record that, but mostly I don't want to. So with that, I'm going to leave you with the immortal words of Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.
Squeaky bum time.